some of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller. Hey everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. We've got a turbocharged episode tonight. We've got a double duty with double guests, which is going to be a double your pleasure, double mint chewing gum type of experience for you. We have Monica Brinkman. She's the author of The Turn of the Karmic Wheel, but she's written tons of books. That's the one that I'm reading today. And also Kenneth Wien, the author of Times to Try, The Soul of a Man. And again, he's written lots of books too. But those are the two books that they sent over to me to read. And we're going to talk to them in just a real quick moment this entire hour. So if you have questions that you would like to ask either of these brilliant authors, call into the hotline at 323-657-1493. They will not bite hard, and we would love to have your calls. We'll take them in the order that were received, but we're going to do lots of chit-chat and find out all about these two talented authors. But before we bring them on, I want to kind of give you the roadmap of where we've been for the week and where we're going. So if this is your first time listening, you can always check back in on demand or tune in live. So if you are a regular listener to the show, you'll know that Rebecca Fisk, Intuitive Psychic, is on once a month, and it's usually one of the highest rated shows. We get hundreds and hundreds of people that call in. And if you would like to listen, tomorrow night's her night for November, live at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thursday at 9 a.m., because they're East Coast, and that's how they roll, Mr. Bob Berg and John David Mann, they're co-authors of a very successful best-selling number one series called The Go-Giver. They've got an expanded edition of this book coming out, and they're going to come on the show and talk about it. Bob's been on several times, and I love him as a guest. So this will be our kind of double duty as well, but we're going to talk to them like it's two separate interviews. I have no idea how that's going to go because we're talking about the same thing. So it should be fascinating. And then on Friday night at 7 p.m., we have Rick Giannatos. He is a music producer of legends. Like, he's worked with the Supremes and Darlene Love. And if I went through the list of names, you'd go like, holy cow, how are you going to do this in just, you know, 20 minutes with him? The show's 2 hours, but on our Friday night dance party, we do a 20-minute behind the scenes with the guest, that's Rick Giannatos, and then we play their music for the balance of hour one. Of course, hour two is your request. But he's going to be on talking about the CD that he's put together called the All American Divas, and it's all the original artists getting back into the studio, re-recording and remastering timeless classics that you will remember from years gone by, along with a brand new DVD and book of the same name. And that's Rick Giannatos this Friday on the Friday Night Dance Party. So I'm really excited for that. But tonight, the excitement's going to start when I welcome our two guests to the show, Mr. Kenneth Wien and Monica Brinkman. And they're also amazing podcast, radio, and I guess I don't know what the new word is, if it's a vlogger, like a video logger, or you'll tell us in just a second. But they host this fantastic podcast weekly Thursday nights at 6 p.m. called It Matters Radio. You can go to itmattersradio.com. We're going to plug them incessantly for the next hour because you have to go see the show. But they do this great podcast every week, and they bring on people from all around the world. And then they also write. And I am fascinated by people who do so many different creative things. So welcome, Monica and Ken. How are you tonight?
Well, thanks for having us on. We're great. Hope you are too.
Well, Monica, I'm going to start with you. Can you, you know, so this is my first time really talking with you. I had the pleasure of kind of, you know, hopping on to your Halloween show a few weeks back, and that was totally fun. But I didn't really get a chance to visit with you and, you know, ask you all the questions about, like, tell me about, you know, who you are at your core and what were you like growing up and how did you become an author. So I'm going to start with you tonight, Monica, if we can, and just find out a little bit about what makes you tick.
Okay, well, if you ask my brothers what I was like growing up, they'll say I was a diva, because I was the youngest and only girl, so a bit spoiled, I must say. But then I hit the real world and woke up and changed completely. So I want to tell everybody Punky's with me. Punky is Punky the Radio Cat, and she joins us on the show all the time, and she's just driving me crazy right now, but she's purring, so that's a good sign. Okay, I always loved reading, adored it, and I always wrote poetry. I was fortunate enough to have a mother that, instead of just bedtime stories, she would recite poetry to me, and I got a love for that, and saved much of it. And I really didn't think about writing novels until I got a bit older, and I don't know what experiences other people have had, but I had, like, these characters pop up in my mind, and they just nagged me to death until I finally wrote the words down. So I guess that's what people call a muse. Well,
I love that. Now, where did you grow up, Monica?
I've been very fortunate, first of all. I grew up on the East Coast, Pennsylvania and New Jersey. And then I moved to California for 30 years. And how I ended up here in the Midwest, I have no idea. But that's where I am right now.
That's where you're at right now. Right on. Well, Ken, I'll just kind of flip the tables here and ask you the same question. Tell me about your life growing up and you know, how do you develop a love of reading and writing?
Well, okay. First of all, I have to tell you that my brother is an only child. He will tell you that, too. And that gives you an idea of how my family of origin dysfunctioned its way.
Okay.
I grew up in New England, and that's something everybody needs to know, because one of my latest books is called Broody New Englander, and it's set up in Maine, where I did a lot of my, maybe I could call it growing up. Some people would say I was more dragged up. let's see, I started out reading. Okay, that was just after, I'm giving away my age here, just after the Second World War.
Okay.
And I went to my father and I said, "Dad, where do babies come from?" And he said, "Well, Kenneth, I'm too busy to talk to you right now. Come back later." And we did eventually revisit the topic. I was 28 at the time, just getting married, and he thought it was time to tell me these things. Well, I knew that my uncle was a physician, and I knew that upstairs in our attic we were storaging his medical books. Because he was over in Germany fighting. And so I would sneak up stairs into the attic, which was forbidden territory.
Uh-oh.
And I'd study those books, and I'd look at those books, and I'd try and figure out the answer to that great question: where do babies come from? And eventually, I will tell you that I learned to read. I didn't get the answer to my question, however. It turns out the books were all written in German. But that's how I developed my love of writing.
I love it. Hey, I also want to let you know that we've got Anna in the Blog Talk chat room tonight, and she gives mad shout-outs to both of you. She says, "I love Monica and her books, and it should be a great interview." I hope so, too. And Kenneth and his books, also, I've read them. So, Anna,
yes.
Thanks for tuning in tonight. We appreciate you being here.
We sure do.
We love Anna.
Yeah.
So, go ahead, Monica. I'm sorry.
I was going to say something interesting about my childhood. I grew up in a haunted house. And I think that might have been where I got the bit of paranormal that I use in many of my tales. It was an old house that they used to use for to hide the sleighs and such. They had underground railroads that went from house to house. And not only was my house haunted, but some of the neighbors' houses were too. They'd been written up in papers many times. So I thought it was normal to see these things. Because I was there at 6 months old. We moved there. And I grew up with ghosts and thought it was just something everybody saw.
Well, and you even kind of referenced that in your book, The Turn of the Karmic Wheel, of one of your characters, has those types of experiences early on. And, you know, she talks about what it was like growing up with her family and how they dealt with her claiming to see things when that wasn't necessarily, you know, politically correct in the family's household there. So I thought that was interesting. So can I ask, did you ever...
Wait a second. I thought, Monica, I have to clarify something here. I always thought that that part of the book was based on Punky's experiences.
Yeah, well, Punky.
And we hear Punky purring there in the background, so she's like, yes.
I know, she's just crazy. I can't get her to stop.
In your house growing up, because I'm in California, so I drink all the California Kool-Aid, so it would not faze me at all to say, I think I need to get a sage smudging stick and then light it and go through the house and say, evil spirits, go away. Did you guys do anything like that, or did you just, like, hang out with your ghosts that were there?
Well, I thought it was normal, and I would, of course, tell my parents and such, and just like the person in the book, they would tell me that I was crazy and that it wasn't so, and I'd be quiet about it, so I wasn't really able to. So, that, of course, the spirits stuck around, whether they were good or evil, because we couldn't do those things like sage and, have people come in and pray.
So did you?
In those days, you weren't allowed to.
Yeah, we probably weren't allowed to. So, did you have any experiences there, Monica, that you remember from growing up where, like, this one time at band camp, and then, you fill in the blank, but did you have anything that really stuck in out of your head?
Oh, yeah, there's been many things that happened, but one of the things, and I even wrote about it, is I used to go down in the basement and roller skate all the time. And I was fine roller skating until I would get to this one spot, and it would scare me, and I would see, like, these shadows that would move. And, you think, oh, okay, I didn't really see that. But then you would see it again and again, and I actually would have people touch me.
Oh.
And that would scare me, and I'd run up the stairs. But probably the most terrifying thing that ever happened to me was in my bedroom. I remember I was laying on my back, and I'd just gone to bed, so I wasn't, half asleep, or I was fully awake, and I'd just gotten into bed and put my head back, and I was completely on my back, and I had something actually take their hands and put them around my throat, and they were choking me. Now, I'm thinking to myself, this can't be happening, I look down, there's nothing there, but I'm being choked. Now, this is really hard to fathom, but it happened. I took my hands and I pried invisible fingers off of my throat. And there were marks on my throat.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm trying to tell my brothers and my parents about this, and they're just, poo-pooing me away like nothing happened. And I'm terrified and crying and everything, and I had to just kind of deal with that myself. But it actually happened to me.
Oh, my goodness. So how old were you when you finally moved out of that house?
I was 11.
See, you had a block of time there. Oh, my gosh. Well,
it was a long time.
Entire show into asking you about your childhood. So let's otherwise, I'm going to ignore both of your books and your writing and your radio show, and I know that's not what we're here to do tonight. So, Ken, out of your, and I'm going to call you Dr. Ken for the rest of the show. So, Dr. Ken, for the rest of the show, did you have anything, that really kind of shaped you as a writer after you realized that what you were looking at was written in German, whether it was in school or, outside of school that was interesting to you?
Yeah, actually, although I'd always really loved reading and writing and done a lot of it, like in high school and stuff like that. What really got me down the path into writing seriously was my cousin's death when I was in my early 20s. My cousin, who was probably my closest friend during childhood, committed suicide in a particularly horrific way. He he bought himself a motorcycle. He was out in California, actually, at grad school. He bought himself a motorcycle, drove up into one of the highways, waited at a rest stop, and then drove out in front of an 18-wheeler.
Oh, my God.
That didn't kill him. So he spent a year recuperating. He spent a year, part in the hospital and back in Massachusetts recuperating. As soon as he could, he went back to California, bought another motorcycle, went to the same place.
Oh, my word.
Pulled out in front of another semi. Yeah.
Wow.
And I decided when I realized that and realized that my entire family was denying that this was suicide. I mean, they were making believe that this was somehow freakish coincidental accident.
Yeah, no.
And I had to deal with it. And that became my purpose in writing. And the funny thing is it took me years to write about that. And then I started a book, which is now available. It's called Memoirs from the Asylum. It's available in print and in Kindle and in audiobook even. And that book was written to come to terms with my cousin's suicide. And that motivated me, but it wasn't the first book I wrote. Actually, even of my serious books, it was the second, because, there were some things that just tear your guts out. And I joke a lot, and I try and see the satiric and funny sides of life, but some things are just so painful that you just need time. And so I did eventually write that book. It is, as I said, available. And the other day I had a realization, and it has to do with dealing with things like that, and dealing with the horrific things that just happened in Paris and are happening all the time all over the world. And I realized how important it is to find that laughter. Even though we're in the middle of that pain, you have to find the humor, the laughter. And I realized something, that laughter is God's way of praying to us.
Well, diving into your book, Times to Try, The Soul of Man. I only got through a little bit of the book today before the show. I just need to be honest with you and tell you that. But I did get into that. I will tell you, though, Dr. Ken, that the writing that you do have in here, it starts off and it's quite jarring, the imagery that you're talking about that's happening to the character and, setting the stage of what's going on. And the next thing you have kind of like this one-liner in there and you're like, that was funny. I didn't expect that to be the case, or at least I was reading the lines like that, and I thought that was really kind of clever because it really takes kind of the edge off of the situation that you're writing about. And what a way to start out your book!
Thank you. Yeah, it is a funny kind of thing. I had two books come out almost simultaneously, one the one you are reading, and the other Broody New Englander. And Broody New Englander is filled with these idyllic and bucolic kind of images. And Times is rough-edged, and it's about a rough-edged protagonist. In fact, a friend and I are working on a movie script for Times, and you couldn't start it where the book starts. So we start in Peru, in Machu Picchu. And it's quite a bit softer. And the fellow who's doing it with me loves the book, and I love the book. And we keep having to tell ourselves that writing a book and writing a movie are two different.
Oh, yeah, completely.
Yeah. And so the latest thing is that and this is really cool, another friend of mine has found, hopefully it will actually go through, a woman who is a major opera star in the New York Metropolitan Opera, and she wants to write the score for the. And I'm thinking to myself, good Lord, what a wonderful thing to do.
That's awesome. Congratulations, Ken. Well, okay, well,
yes,
let me ask.
Wonderful.
Okay, so, you know, your style of writing here, Monica, is, at least in this particular book, The Turn of the Karmic Wheel, is, again, completely different. And I was talking very quickly before the show started. I said two completely different styles of writing, but I appreciate both, and both are well written. You know, Ken's book, you know, throws us in the middle of, you know, this thing that's happening in New York City, and, you know, then we start getting some background, and the next thing you know, we're off and running. When we start out in the book, you know, the Turn of the Karmic Wheel, you know, we get these really fantastic character descriptions that, you know, set the stage for what's going to be happening in the course of the book. How did you did you have something that happened, Monica, that said, you know what, when I become a writer, when I grow up, I'm going to write books like this? Or and I honestly, I haven't read your other books yet, so I need to go back and now read the rest of your series. But, you know, how did you decide this is the flavor I'm going to write with today?
You know, actually, I was in a writing group, and this is how this actually happened, to tell you the truth. And someone told me that you couldn't mix genre, that you couldn't have a setting in the Ozarks. And they kept telling me, you couldn't do this and have a good book. And I said, you know what? Yes, you can. So I took the things that they told me I couldn't do, and I did them. And it came out great. It's just you have to be a little bit
Monica.
More... When you mix genre, you have to be a little more careful, you know. I also changed point of view, which is a no-no. But it worked.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I think that is interesting about your writing style here, Monica, is that you do have this story that you would think should be taking place in like a high rise in New York City or something like that, but it is in the middle of Missouri someplace, and you're like, this is not what I would expect. But the way that you paint the picture of the characters and their settings and their lives, you're like, oh, I totally see it. It makes sense.
And I also wanted to this is what people have told me, and I laugh about it, that they say that I'm a mix of Nora Roberts and Stephen King. So,
okay.
I write simpler like Nora Roberts does, because I want everybody to be able to just pick up the book and read it, and not have to get a dictionary out to understand everything.
And honestly, I'll say I hate that when I'm reading books where it's like, oh, the author wants to impress me with how many $6 words they have, you know, in the book. I bet they got a bonus, like, you know, football players. Okay, you're going to get an extra $1,000 if you score a touchdown. Monica's going to get an extra $1,000 if she uses an 18-syllable word. You know, it's like nothing turns me off quicker than a book that's hard to read. And the other thing that I really liked about your chapters, really for both of you, but Monica on the Turn of the Karmic Wheel, is that your chapters are short. So somebody who has ADD like I do, because I have the attention span of a gnat, I can get through, you know, 1, 2, 3 chapters and go like, okay, I get this. I know where she's going, versus getting really distracted and lost along the way and then having to go back 7 pages and try to recapture where I'm supposed to get caught up to. So I appreciate the fact that it's simple, engaging, and the chapters are short, because it helps me stay focused as a reader.
And I also wanted to, I'm just going to say this real fast because I know Ken would like to talk also. I wanted to write something that is character driven so people will enjoy it, but I also wanted people to realize that what they do in life, their actions, every single day, every second, means something. You know, So I had the concept that, you know, everybody says, oh, karma happens in your next life and da-da-da-da-da. What if it happened right now? What if something came to your town, a force or a universal force, and it just made it happen now? You're going to be answering to all the actions that you've done in your life. how many could do it, and what would happen.
Well, and you know,
yeah, I couldn't agree more with that about Monica. When you're writing a book, one of the goals has got to be to get people thinking about what's meaningful to them and to touch values and issues of soul and heart. And I think Monica's books really do that. I hope mine do as well. And
oh, they do.
It's not just let me entertain you. I mean, one of my favorite moments in all of stage, I love theater, is in the play Gypsy, when they do let me entertain you. And finally, at a certain point, Rose, the mother, sings the song, and she realizes, oh my God, there's meaning here. And it's that realization that there's meaning to be found, that that is the purpose of art, even if the art involved is being a stripper. It's just a powerful wham in your head. And Monica's books do that to people. They make you think, well, what the heck is my life about? If I die right now, am I going to be reincarnated as a cockroach scurrying down the wall? Or maybe I'll make it even. Maybe I'll make it even above a human. Maybe I'll make it to being a dolphin or an orangutan. Something.
Well, Kent, I'm going to throw this right back at you then. I mean, because you know, in the book of Times to Try the Soul of Man, you know, your lead character is a very angry, you know, young man for a variety of reasons, and he just seems, you know, very. Do you write from a place of experience, or how much of this is really actually fiction?
Well, okay. First of all, I write fiction, okay? Everything I write is fiction, even if I'm dealing with a personal issue. But secondly, that particular book is based on a real-life story. And as you read the book, I'm just going to tell you that 90% of the book is a fictionalized account of true events. Now, the character, okay, the book is a personal journey for the character. In the end, the character does find, in some meaningful way, redemption. And that redemption is through acceptance of love and also by telling the story, because this story that he's telling is a very dangerous one. If you look at the dedication in the book is dedicated to somebody, and that person to whom the book is dedicated, he actually was murdered in New York City. And even today, the person whose life it's based on, who shared all of this stuff with me, knows that there is a possibility when this story is told and when people read it and when people realize how much of it is true, that they may come after him. So that there's a redemption there as well. But to answer your underlying question, which really should be, you know, what is it we learn there? In the book, there is a moment when he hears the voice of God. I guess you haven't gotten to that, possibly.
I haven't gotten to that part yet, so I'll look forward to that later tonight.
Yeah. And when he does, later on he is told to hear the voice of God is a great responsibility. And down the road, he realizes, as I hope we all do, and I don't mind telling this part of the story, the purpose of the book. Hopefully, we all realize that when we hear the voice of God within ourselves, the responsibility is that we must take courage in our actions and courage in our lives to do and say and tell the story, even if that means facing danger.
I think now would be a great time to take a quick break. We're halfway through the show. I can't believe it. This could be a six-hour marathon, which just means I'm going to have Monica and Ken back for a follow-up later on. But we're going to take a break and hear from our friends at It Matters Radio and a little Rainbow Bruce. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes and talk more with Monica and Ken of It Matters Radio.
Welcome to our discussion of It Matters Radio. Our guest today is Angus McWilliams.
Hey, laddie, let's get on with this thing. I'm on my way to a birthday party for Nessie.
You're throwing a birthday party for the Loch Ness Monster?
Well, first of all, it's not a monster. And second of all, I'm talking about niece Nessie. She's a wee bit of a lovely lass.
I see. Well, okay. Angus, can you give us your thoughts on It Matters Radio?
Aye, wonderful people. They had me on a while back to talk about my book.
Your what?
My book. I wrote a book about the adventures in Scotland.
Oh, I see. A book.
That's what I just said. What are you, a duff man?
It Matters Radio focuses on discovering new talent and bringing important indie artists on the air. Monica, Kenneth, and Carrie offer up meaningful conversation on new music, books, and fun topics. It's unlike any other radio program known to man and woman alike.
You can say that again.
Known to man and woman alike.
Just because I said you can say it again doesn't mean you have to say it again.
I'm just doing my best to show everyone that It Matters Radio basically brings variety, fun, and entertainment with a sincere desire to discover new topics and talent.
Oh, why didn't you just say that?
I just did.
Hey, laddie, remind me when I can listen.
It Matters Radio is on every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
You Americans with your different time zones. We only have one time zone in Scotland.
And that would be...
That would be the time to down a pint or two of ale.
It Matters Radio, for the best in conversation, music, books, and entertainment. Join us Thursday evenings at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Discover the depth, diversity, meaningfulness, caring, guest-focused, friendly, enjoyable atmosphere of It Matters Radio with Ken, Monica, and Carrie.
That's a mouthful if I ever heard one.
Yes, and I'm going to go brush my teeth now. It Matters Radio.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM 950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the Queen Bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
I always love when we get to talk about Rainbow Brew because they make their coffee beans out of Minneapolis, St. Paul. And I thought when they approached me about doing the show that they were absolutely insane because how are you going to grow good coffee beans out of Minneapolis, St. Paul? And I said, here, we'll send you a packet of it. And they sent me some. And I'm like, holy cow, this is great coffee. I try not to drink coffee at night because I tend to be a little caffeinated. But if you want to go check out Rainbow Brew's Facebook fan page, you can like their page and also get some valuable coupons. I think if you order now, you get like a dollar off if you mention whatever coupon code they've got. Also, if you say, I heard about you on Rated G Radio, they actually do a happy dance inside their store. So when you order their coffee, make sure you tell them you heard it on the radio. And, of course, our dear friends at It Matters Radio. We've got Monica Brinkman and Dr. Ken Ween on the show tonight talking about writing. We're going to talk a little bit more about their writing journeys as authors, but then I want to like turn the tables and talk about their podcast that they have every Thursday night at 6 o'clock and find out how all of that came about because I am fascinated by anybody else who does this. So we've got Monica and Dr. Ken back with us, and so I'm going to start with Monica here just because, you know, your name is alphabetically first when we come to last name. So, Brinkman, here we go.
Oh, I married correctly then, didn't I?
You married correctly. You got the memo. So from a writing standpoint, how do you – I mean, are you self-published? Do you have a publisher that you go through? How is that all working out for you?
I have a publisher, and it's All Things That Matter Press. And They are wonderful, wonderful people. I couldn't speak more highly of anyone, and their editing is superb. What I like about All Things That Matter is they go by the story. If they love your story, they'll ask you to sign a contract with them. They'll publish you. It's not all about money. Of course they want money, and we all do.
Sure.
But I think it's a great opportunity for people. I know with, in my particular case, because I have kind of this speculative fiction, you know, you can't just go to the bookstore and say, okay, Monica's is paranormal, or it's spiritual, or it's suspense. You know, it's all of those things. So it's, most publishers will just say, well, we're not even going to touch it because we can't put it into a box anywhere.
Wow.
And all Things That Matter, they looked at it, they liked the story, and they embraced it, and they're just wonderful. So Phil Harris and Deb Harris, hats off to you for being there for writers.
So
you want to do something a little bit different.
Monica, I want to ask you a question about that, because I am always stunned. In my 4 years of doing this, I really have only had one author on, and I'm not going to use their name, that when I got into their book, and they're bestseller, you know, bestsellers, that, you know, every single book that comes out in the series is a bestseller. And I got two of the books, and I was reading the books, and I'm like, this is the most boring crap I've ever read in my entire life. But that's one out of like 100 authors that I've had on, because every author that's come on, I've had LGBT authors, I've had science fiction authors, I've had fantasy, I've had, I mean, you name it, across the board. Every single book I've read and honestly enjoyed. I don't need to tell you that your book is good if it's not, because I'll just say, boy, Monica, that was a great book. What would you, you know, and we'll just go off on a monotone tangent. But I love the pages that I've read and the turn of the karmic wheel so far. How do you think, from a publishing standpoint, and, you know, I guess we should ask your publisher, but I don't understand how publishers have a hard time, you know, taking these great books that you write and saying, well, I just don't know how to market them. To me, that doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. It's all about money, because they don't really want to market. They want you to market. They want you to have a million people that are going to purchase your book. It's just like the record industry nowadays. They want to invest as little as they can and take as much as they can.
Sure.
It's greed, and it's out there, and our particular publisher doesn't have that greed. You know, of course like I said, if they love it, they're going to offer you a contract. And they're very honest that it's a partnership. You're going to be marketing also. So it's, you know, but the other, I mean, these big-time traditional publishers, the big houses, you have to come to them with a plan of marketing.
Which is just, I think that's sad.
Yeah. So why do that? You know, why make them even richer and greedier? And I wanted to mention real fast that my book is a kind of a two-part series. I just had the second part come out, about 2 months ago, and it's called The Wheel's Final Turn.
Oh.
You can read both of these by themselves, and they'll make complete sense. You don't have to read the other one, and then, you know, they're kind of standalone. But if you read The Turn of the Karmic Wheel and then The Wheel's Final Turn, it kind of completes the whole thing, the whole cycle. So I just had to get that out there.
Well, we totally have to. You know, and I think that's one of the things that I really like about having authors on the show is they, you know, it's a little sweat equity. They might have the, you know, help of their publisher and so forth, but they're not afraid to get out there and do a little promotion to help move some units, you know, because I tell everybody before they come on the show, this show is about moving the merch. If we don't sell some books for you or at least raise the awareness of what you're doing, we're not doing our job. So hopefully we'll move some of those books. Where do you like the people to go buy your books, Monica? Do you like them to go to your website? Or
The best place to go is actually Amazon or Barnes & Noble. But I say Amazon because people know them better. And you can just Google Monica Brinkman, and it'll come up, or Google the title of one of the books. the wheel's find a turn, or, you know, the turn of the karmic wheel, and it'll just pop up. I do like people to go to my website, though, to get to know me a little bit and read some reviews and such. And I'm going to give that out real fast. It's called...
Please.
Of course, it's HTTP, itmattersradio.wix.com, and then /onthebrink. And you can even just Google On the Brink and my name, and it'll come up also. But like, that's what the website's called, On the Brink.
Love it. Well, thanks, Monica. And then, Ken, what about you? What's your story as far as being, are you self-published? Do you work with a publisher?
Well, okay, let me start by telling you that Monica and I met because of our connections, mutual connection with it, All Things That Matter Press. And they have published a few of my books, not all, but a few. I'm also have some stuff that is self-published. And actually, I'm right now in the process of developing an anthology with a friend of mine that'll be coming out soon, and that's going to be from yet another publisher. But we'll do another show about that, okay, when it's ready.
We'll get a whole series lined up in 2016. That'll be awesome.
Okay, and where people can buy my books, the best place is Amazon. For one thing, in addition to the fact that everybody knows Amazon, some of the books are in audio book, some as well as print and Kindle, and a few are just small Kindle standalones. So they have the full range. Barnes, of course, does support Nook. But it's really easier to get, except for the Nook versions, it's easier to go to Amazon and look for my name. And believe it or not, this is one of the few true blessings of my life. I am the only Kenneth Ween, when you spell the last name, W-E-E-N-E. And a friend of mine Googled me a while back, and he said, my God, it goes on for pages and pages. but on Amazon, it's the only one.
There we go.
And if you want to learn a little more about, if you want to see some of my short writing, if you want to check out some of my essays, things like that, I do have a website. And again, it's just www.kennethween.com. And I'm going to take this opportunity to remind my dear friend Monica Brinkman that she still has to send me a piece for that, because I have a friends section there. And I encourage dear friends like Monica to post stuff so you can learn not only about me on my website, but about some of these other great folks that I have had the privilege of knowing. And I also want to mention one other thing. Besides doing the podcast, the radio show, which we'll talk about in a minute, I guess, Monica and I are both part of a blog called the Write Room Blog. And that's spelled W-R-I-T-E, obviously. And if you look for that online, you'll find a lot of really fine writers, Monica Brinkman being one of them, Ken Ween being another, but a lot of people. And it's we get a lot of hits on that blog. And it's one of the many ways we market, because marketing. Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute. You know, even the most famous authors that we meet these days are having trouble with getting their books bought. The world is full of books. I saw recently that the average book sells 30 copies. Isn't that awful? And I'm sorry to say, but that includes the books that even people's there are some books that even your brothers and sisters don't buy. But that is really, it's a difficult world out there.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult. And marketing is, whether it's by taking part on radio shows like this, or the one that Monica and I co-host, or blogging or using Twitter effectively or whatever it is, marketing is a constant responsibility of the author. And as I say,
and we're
going to
have a show
most,
about that.
Yeah.
In December.
And,
December 13th.
Well, yeah, actually, if people want to contact Monica or myself via our radio show, In Matters Radio, we are doing that. It's a kind of closed thing for authors who want to learn how to do more effective marketing. But we'll be happy if anybody who's listening wants to contact us, and we'll be glad to add you in into that discussion.
Right.
Well, now is the perfect time. Well, the fact that you love them is awesome, but now you've brought up a great point about the fact that, books or CDs or indie artists, I'm going to lump everybody who's an independent whatever, meaning you're not signed to a major label, you're not signed to a major publishing company, you're not signed to a major studio, you're indie and you're doing a lot of the blood, sweat, and tears yourself. I think it's important when we have an opportunity to showcase people like that. And I'm going to say my batting average is pretty good for the people that I've enjoyed having as guests on the show. So I've been very, very lucky. I hope you guys have been as well. When you're able to showcase people that are indie artists of whatever caliber, I think that you should absolutely do that. So I don't know how I found you, Ken and Monica, but I'm going to tell you that it's been a pleasure to connect with you on social media. How in the world did It Matters Radio start, and where did you guys come from, and how did you get to where you're at today?
We started on Blog Talk. Yes. Oh, gosh, what is that, about 4 years ago, actually? And Blog Talk was fine, and but we wanted to do something a little bit different, where we love talking, but we wanted another dimension. And we found a place called Spreecast, which is their own studio. I don't need special equipment. And we can play music. We can speak with people. But they can also join us on camera, and it's live. It's not a podcast that we're you know, doing ahead of time and then putting on perfect. It's like old live TV. You know, if something goes wrong, it goes wrong. And it's funny sometimes because of that, and other times it's not. In fact, Garrett's going to be on our show on December 10th, guys, so you're going to have to listen.
Oh, we're going to totally promote the heck out of that. Can I ask a question about the Spreecast thing? From a video standpoint, and I think this is one of the things that I am fascinated about, because I would love to do what you're doing from a video standpoint. I am terrified of doing that, though. How has the technology been for you as host of a different platform like that?
Well, let me answer that very quickly. The technology for me has been simple beyond belief because Monica handles it all.
That is simple. Thanks, Dr. Ken.
It's been quite easy. The issue I have is people need to follow direction and read. We send a little guide out. And we say you need to do this, and this, just like you say. Okay, you need to call me at 7 o'clock. If you're using Skype, you need to do this, blah, blah. And if I don't listen, we're not going to be calling incorrectly. It's like dialing the wrong number to get on the show. You know, it's never going to happen. But I do have to say that just like TV, it all has to do with connectivity because it's done on the internet. So if you have a provider who is giving you poor coverage, you're not going to get the best coverage. And you might be on speakerphone with us. We'll see your picture, but you're not going to be able to hear, so you'll be speaking through speakerphone. That doesn't normally happen. Normally it goes very well. And I love the intimacy. We're able to bring on either audio or video of our artist's work. People can join us also. If they can come into
actually,
the chat room
this Thursday,
and chat.
Monica, this Thursday, Monica, I think we're going to have somebody from Pennsylvania who was planning to ask to come on, and somebody from Atlanta who is planning to ask to come on. So we're going to have a I do too. I'm really excited to have that happen.
So again, just to, so I'm clear, people can call in like they normally would, or they can do the video chat. So, I mean, you can still give them an option to participate on your show a couple of different ways.
No.
Mostly it's chatting.
If they can't use the internet to come on the show, if they live in the United States, because other than that, it's not just not feasible, what I do is I phone them and relay it through the speaker phone into my computer. It's certainly less than ideal, but
most people are able to connect without issue. And like I said, people who are in the chat room, they can't call us, but they can come on screen with us if they'd like.
Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm.
So and they can come on camera.
Tell us about the type of...
ask questions in the chat room itself. They can type in a question.
Hey, Dr. Ken and Monica, tell us about the type of guests and what's a typical show like for you guys also?
I'll go first because I book discussion guests. And I try to get as wild a range of guests as I can. Books, I read at least one book by every author who comes on. Before we discuss a book, I want to have read it. And that, whether it's an academic book or a good piece of romantic fiction, I'll have read it. The other thing is, I'm always looking for a range of topics. We've had an opera singer on. We've had an editor of the Boston Globe on. We've had a reporter from the Washington Post on. We've had political candidates on.
Actors.
And people
comedians.
From charities. Psychics. We really try and just constantly expand the range. This week, for example, we have a young man who just came out with a great speculative fiction novel about growing up gay in America.
The musical guest this week is more jazz oriented, and we do all types of music. We're very diverse in that. If we like the music, we'll invite you to come on, no matter what it is. You know, it could be reggae, it could be country, it can be rock, it can be pop.
Again, diversity.
Yeah, blues, opera.
Yeah. So who has been like the most unusual guest that you've had on the show?
I don't know if I'm going to say the most unusual. I could tell
Mr.
you
Clay.
that my favorite, probably my favorite, I'll mention two that really blew me away. One was we had the Crayon Initiative on a while back, and I just love that charity. I don't know if you've ever gone out to eat with kids, but the first thing they do, even before they fill up your water glasses, they bring those kids crayons and something to color on.
Yep.
And usually those crayons are either left behind, often broken, et cetera, and the restaurants just throw them out. So the Crayon Initiative came up with the idea of collecting those used crayons, remelting them, and making them into a sturdier, different shape that would be easy for the kids involved to hold, and donating them to use in children's hospitals.
How cool.
And that just blew me away. The other, I'm going to use a book example of somebody who just really delighted me, because every now and then Monica pushes us, and she says, let's do a contest, whether it's a Christmas show or a Halloween show or whatever it is. And not so long ago, we were doing one of those contests, and we had a guy send us a short story. And to put it mildly, we really liked the short story. Well, he contacted us and said, hey, my book's coming out. Would you take a look at it? And his name's Phil Richardson, by the way. And he's actually sent me, he has two books out now, and I'm reading the second one. And fabulous, fabulous stuff. And so he's going to be coming on in a couple months as our guest. And the reason that blows me away is because we actually do, on occasion, find talent. We've had one musical guest, I recall. Wasn't one of the musical guests we had sign during the show, Monica?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Holy cow.
We have, I want to mention this really fast. We have a gentleman called Stephen Wrench. And all you musicians, singers, bands out there, please check out the series he's doing with us. He's going to be on again December 17th. Mm-hmm. He's going to give you tips of how to make it in the industry. And it's going to be different than you think.
Okay, well, I need to be tuning into
that show. He's
doing
four different series. Yeah, we just did one last week. Unfortunately, I was talking about how your internet provider has to be good. Well, his went out, so he had to call up using his cell phone. But you can still hear him, and it's still worthy to. It's worth listening to. We have Grant Schlater on, who's an author and also a promoter over in the UK. Stephen Wrench is here in the United States. He's a voter for the Grammys. He's got a lot of experience, but
Monica, you're being unfair to Stephen. While he physically is in the United States, he is promoting people in China, in Southeast Asia,
everywhere.
In India, in Australia, New Zealand, and Europe. I mean, he's
worldwide, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I want people to call in, Ken, and find out why he's doing that.
Right. And I want them to listen to the last week's show, which, of course, is available on podcast. And here's how you get to that podcast, folks. You go to www.itmattersradio.com, and there we have a website. And that website includes podcasts, it includes contests, it includes book reviews and music reviews.
And we Facebook.
We have a Facebook page. And Punky Punky has a Facebook page.
It's just www.facebook.com/itmattersradio. And that'll give you all our old, just look under events and you'll see all the old events, which are the podcasts, and upcoming events also. We did this. Our reason was, just like you, Garrett, which is why we adore and love you, to assist the artists. We know how hard it is as authors to make it, and we know how hard it is for organizations and indie musicians and authors and such to make it also.
Yeah, and I feel very personally about what we're doing, that we have become very much kind of like a family. The funny thing is, Monica and I have never actually met in person. I believe in past lives. I know that Monica Brinkman and I are going through yet the same connection in some way that we have had in the past. Maybe it's the third or fourth time we're going through this. But I think we're doing it right this time.
Because we're having
a lot of fun. And we are creating this atmosphere on the show and on the website and on Facebook where we're really encouraging people. And I love that. I love the fact that we're encouraging people.
I love it too. And everybody, and at this point, we're out of time. Our hour is up. It's been Monica and Ken with It Matters Radio. Go listen to their show this Thursday night on itmattersradio.com. I've got a link to their website that's right there on the show page right here on Rata G Radio. And tomorrow night, tune in live for Rebecca Fisk. She'll be taking your calls. Phone lines open at 6:45, so if you'd like to get your call answered, this is your secret. Call in early, and we'll get you on the show. Guys, it's been great. I can't wait to have you guys back in 2016. And thanks for taking time out of your night.
Thank you. And we look forward to seeing you on the 10th of December.
I can't wait. Thanks, guys. Take care. Thanks again.
You too. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.